Hello, everyone. Welcome back to J-Talk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and once again, I'm joined by John Steele. John, how you doing, buddy?
Very well, Stu, thanks. This is a rare treat for the listeners. You know, we normally do a few solo pods in between drinks, don't we? But we're back together again in short order.
Yeah, I mean, it must be that we're coming to the business end of the season, I guess. And, you know, we want to keep everyone abreast of all the latest goings on in the league. And this one, John, we're going to focus on J3, right? And so, but before we get onto that, I know we usually give a shout out to the patrons at the end of the podcast, but I thought we'd swing it in front and center while we're recording this. Yeah, we just, on behalf of John, Ben, and Sam, and myself, obviously, we just want to give a big shout out to the patrons for just continually supporting us through this marathon season. It's nearly coming to an end, but I know I speak for everyone that we really appreciate the time and the money and the feedback that the patrons give us and that all listeners give us. It's it's nice to know that like people listen to us and people take on board and what we say, even if it does turn out to be wrong some of the time. Some of the time it's right. When we move on to our J2 podcast, we might think about who predicted Tokushima to win the league this year, but we're not going to talk about that just yet, John, right? This is a J3 zone, isn't it?
That's right. You talked yourself out of the pod and back into it.
I did well. All right then. So for this podcast, we're going to focus a lot on the three teams that are vying for promotion, along with Akita, up to J2 next year. Those teams are AC Nagano Parcero, Sagamihara, and FC Gifun. We'll take them in the order that that they sit right now. And so right now in J3, I think Nagano find themselves in second place, John. And that's because they won 3-1 at Yokohama Sports and Social Club, a game in which I believe there was a VIP present, was there not?
Yeah, you can even see that you can catch a glimpse of two VIPs if you watch the, not on the DAZN highlights, because they've stopped showing the players coming onto the pitch, haven't they now?
And
But dedicated enough,
there you go.
Like I was, to try and catch a glimpse of these heroes in our midst. If you watch the full replay of the game just before kickoff, my son and I, I should just get on with it, shouldn't I, really? Yeah, my son and I went to the game yesterday. We were free, and it was warm and sunny. I think it was about 17 degrees at kickoff, so I was able to swing. I was able to get my shore leave pass stamped, and we went along to the match. We were obviously hoping for YSCC to play well and get a result, and it wasn't to be. Nagano were a bit too strong. Much too strong, I think, in the second half, we have to say. But yeah, it was a good day out, as it always is at YSCC. 1,000 fans in the stadium, big contingent of traveling Nagano supporters, and good day out all round, I think.
So what did those traveling fans see? So obviously they saw Nagano win 3-1, but you were there. What kind of game was it?
I think the first 15 minutes was pretty much YSCC starting strongly and trying to get on the front foot without really creating much. Nagano very competently, I would say, kept them at arm's length pretty much. And I was feeling smug just before half time, because Nagano grew into the game more and more as that first half went on. And the player that I always give my son one player to watch when we go to a game at the stadium. And the player that I'd given him to watch was Naoki Sanda. And he swept Nagano into the lead just before half time when Yuzuru Yoshimura picked him out. It was a good goal. It was well taken. The defending wasn't great, and I think that was a feature of YSCC all season, but including yesterday. So it's sometimes a bit difficult to judge how well Nagano actually played, because they had a lot more space than they will do against better sides in J3. But yeah, they were 1-0 up at the break, and I think they were good value for that. In the second half, strangely, I think Nagano were pretty much in control for the whole 45 minutes plus stoppage time, really. But YSCC did stun them a little bit with an equaliser 10 minutes into that second period. It was an absolutely stupendous volley as well from outside the box from Takuya Miyamoto. I don't know if you caught that on the highlights.
I did. It was an absolute golazo. He's had a superb season.
Yeah, and I mean 14. I mean that's his 14th goal, and we know that YSCC attack and create a lot of chances, but they're bottom of the league at this point. 31 games in, so to have scored 14 goals when he's been the lone striker a lot of the time in an attack minded team, but a weak one, I think we can say. Just imagine if you took him out of YSCC's team and gave 14 goals to Gifu. You know, I plucked the name at random. You know, they might find themselves second instead. So yeah, he's been a real eye-catching player for YSCC this year, and they were level thanks to his super volley from outside the box. Well worth checking out on the highlights. However, parity only lasted for about 4 minutes because Nagano were back in front in the 59th minute. A really weird goal that I was really looking forward to watching when I got home. Again, because Nagano forced a corner, some pretty shaky goalkeeping from Ise Oichi when he spilled a shot and it nearly went in, but it went behind for a corner. When the corner came in, the defender, Niki Urakami, sort of looped a header across to the back post. And then, this is what my son and I couldn't see in the stadium, but his Urakami's header actually hit the post and came back. But YSCC's captain, Koichi Miao, had jumped to try and clear the initial header and missed it, and that meant that as he was coming back down to earth, the ball hit the post, hit him, and went in. So it ended up being an own goal from Miao, and Nagano were back in front. After that, to be honest, YSCC huffed and puffed, but Nagano did that thing that good teams do. If they sort of the taller person holding the small person, they're kind of swinging their arms furiously to try and get punches in, but they can't. That's pretty much what it felt like. And then in the end, Nagano sealed it, wrapped things up with a very, very well-worked goal, 5 minutes from time. Very, very nicely finished as well, we have to say, by Kazuaki Sasso. So, I think 3-1 was probably about right. Entertaining match. And I think probably Nagano's best performance for a good couple of weeks. We know they struggled to beat Tenman Imabari the week before. And they lost the two games prior to that, hadn't they? So I think the Nagano fans who made it to Mitsuzawa would have been pretty enthused by seeing their team score 3 goals and pick up what could end up being a priceless away win, really.
Yeah, because that win kind of puts the destiny in their own hands, because they're now in second on 55 points. They're 1 point above SC Sagamihara, who had started the round of matches in second place. And while their unbeaten run continued, they were held 1-1 at Vanraure Hachinohe in what looked from the highlights to be quite a decent game, John. I think just looking at the highlights that I watched, Sagamihara went in front very early on. I think it was like the third minute or so. Masashi Wada with a very, very nice finish very early on. And then they had a couple more chances. I think they hit the crossbar and they had a header flash just wide, you know, all in the first kind of 25 minutes. But Hachinohe were never really out of this game, I don't think. I remember one excellent one-handed save from Sagamihara's Victor to keep Hachinohe out in the first half. But in the second half, the very impressive, very impressive Tsubasa Ando, he volleyed very, very calmly and very, I was going to say cutely, but I don't think it was a cute volley. I think it was a controlled volley into the top corner to bring things level. And yeah, after that, Sagamihara went all out for it, because I think they sensed that this was their time, but they just couldn't get anything. They just couldn't get anything going and ended up drawing this game 1-1. 16 games unbeaten, John. You look at the number of draws that they've had. I think they've had 12 draws this year, and they've only lost five games, which is the second least in the league. You know, just even just one of those draws into a win, and the destiny's in their hands. But maybe, yeah, maybe they're definitely still in with a chance, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, anything could happen in the last three rounds, couldn't it? I think Sagamihara is just a funny, and I'm in danger of repeating comments we've made on previous pods, I think, but they're just a funny side in the sense that, yeah, they're 16 games unbeaten. They're, you know, just 1 point off an automatic promotion spot with three games to go. But at times, they just kind of flatter to deceive a little bit, I think, and they don't quite convince. I think one of the problems is, if you look at their results, they tend not to kind of batter anybody, thrash anybody. If they score first, they tend to back themselves to go on and win, you know, narrowly, because they have a lot of confidence in their defence. Victor, the goalkeeper, obviously, and a couple of other really good, and we should mention giant defenders as well, like Daiki Ume, for example, at centre back. And yeah, they kind of have sort of, it's two banks of four usually, or you know, a very, very solid back four, back five. And then, they just allow the front players, it can be Romulo or Yuri or Kiyohara or a Saito, you know, to work their magic in the sort of final third. But yeah, I think they often at times fall into this trap of scoring first and then just assuming that they're going to go on and finish the job at 1-0. And you can see when that happens and you can see the goal. I think the equaliser came on about 60 minutes, didn't it, in this game. Then they have a sort of frantic last 30 minutes of trying to up the tempo again and get a winner. And I think we could definitely see a situation where Sagamihara do end up finishing second and getting promotion. And we sort of, I'm not trying to say they wouldn't deserve it. 16 games unbeaten is an incredible achievement, and if there was no Aki to this season, then we'd be probably be talking about Sagamihara a lot more. But you mentioned there's been a lot of draws. I mean, they even had that run where they drew five in a row, didn't they, and were still second. And I think in my, you know, with my serious analytical head on, Sagamihara having so many draws in that unbeaten run and still being in the thick of it, it says a bit more about the league as a whole this year than it does about Sagamihara. I think they're a very, very well organised, competent side, and that gets you a long way in J3. But do they have enough kind of firepower almost to get them over the line over in the last three games now that they're a point behind Nagano? We have to wait and see. But yeah, the goal that they scored from Masashi Wada was excellent, and they you know, on another day they could have won this game. But yeah, I just wonder if psychologically how they'll feel about, you know, letting go of second place with just three matches left. What, I don't know, what do you think? I mean, we're talking about Nagano and Sagamihara. On paper, I feel like Nagano are a better side. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll go along with that. I think it's you know, it's odd because Parcero's defensive record is much better than Sagamihara's, and it's not it's not something you'd immediately think, though, because I'm kind of in the same vein as you. My image of Sagamihara is built on defense, because they because of this unbeaten record, you just automatically assume that, you know, that they don't concede that many goals. But it's, you know, they've scored less than kind of, they've scored the least amount of goals in the top six. And they've conceded, what is it, nine more goals than Nagano. They're an odd appraisal, I think, Sagamihara, because I'm not sure when you delve like a little bit deeper into them, I'm not sure they fit in many kind of stereotypical boxes. They're not a team of gunslingers. They're not a team that just parks the bus. They're somewhere in the middle. And
do you think they've benefited from the way this season has been compressed into, you know, essentially 7 months? You know, because their unbeaten run, you know, that it's almost, I feel like it's almost helped them having the games coming so thick and fast. because they've been in a groove.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point, and I think it's the it'll be the same when we ultimately analyze Blah Blitz Exeter as well. I mean, once you get ahead of steam, which in and of itself is quite difficult to do when the games are kind of so thick and fast. But if you get that confidence, and if you get that mindset that we're not going to lose, we're going to go into these games thinking, well, the least we're going to get is a point. It gives you, I would guess, a pretty decent kind of start point to go from. I don't know that. I think they're a physical side as well. They're not going to get they're not going to get out muscled, and they're not going to get kind of out battled. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because they've got they've got strong players kind of throughout the lineup. And we're going to talk about the remaining fixtures in the latter part of this pod. But given that Nagano and Gifu have to still play each other, Sagamihara, if they win out, they'll have every chance of going up, I would assume. They're a difficult team to analyze, but maybe that's kind of one of their strengths in a weird way, because you find it difficult to pinpoint what they're actually good at or what they're actually weak at.
I definitely think we should let the listeners in on the fact that we broadly speaking watch highlights of most games. So I think Sagamihara are one of these teams where if you look at just their highlights and just their stats, there's something missing, there's a piece of the puzzle missing there that we're not going to. So we probably have to watch a few more of their games in detail to know for sure. I think you hit upon something really important, is they're a difficult team to play against, and if you and I are having trouble analysing them after 31 games, you can imagine there's quite a few opponents they've had this year who've probably been in a similar boat, where the managers probably wanted to give a team talk of these are their strengths, these are their weaknesses, but it's, you know, Friday afternoon before the game and they're still not sure exactly what they should be working on. So it's interesting. I mean, yeah, sometimes you watch your highlights, or I've watched a few of their games, it's like long throw after long throw when they come forward. You're like, well, this is not, and the long throw is not even particularly good. And then other games you watch, and then Romulo is like dancing through and scoring goals, or Yuri's, you know, forcing in goals. And they also have other good. I mean, the goal they scored, Matt Wada, you know, wasn't nothing kind of agricultural about that really. Although it did come from a long ball, there was nothing wrong with the finish. I think another point you made is good, is, you know, they don't score that many. They tend to have narrow wins, and when they concede goals, they tend to concede a few in like a defeat, you know, like a 3-0 defeat here or there, and then they go back to being... I think that's the key game, because I can't back a team that plays that poorly even once and say that I think they're gonna get a promotion spot. But we are in weird uncertain times, you know, Stu, globally as and so. Yeah, it could happen. I think as well that things are distorted by Akita just running away with it this year as well. So you're sort of comparing, I mean, none of the teams that we're talking about in this pod are really at Akita's level, are they? And yet they're in the same league, at least for another three games. So it's kind of, I'm having to constantly reassess my expectations of what a second place team looks like, to be honest. I will say it would be fun to have playoffs, wouldn't it? If they just said the second to fifth can have playoffs, that'd be that'd be interesting.
Mm. John, FC Gifu 0, Gainari Tottori 2. What do you want to know?
Were Tottori as good value for the win as they looked from the highlights that I saw?
Very much so. Next. Mm. No. I'm. I'm not bitter. You can hear that in my voice. I think this was, out of all Gifu's defeats this year, possibly with the exception of getting turned over by Seretso under 23s, which was blindly horrific, this was the worst defeat, because it came at such a critical juncture. So Gifu played on Saturday, whereas Nagano and Sagamihara played on Sunday. So Gifu had the chance to go into second place and put that, I don't know, psychological pressure on the other teams. But after 10 minutes, they were 1-0 down. There was some very, very poor defending. If you look at the goal, I don't know, you won't see Gifu's left back, Wataru Hashimoto, who has won J1 and has played in some fantastic teams, but he was just nowhere to be found. He wasn't even in the frame when Totori were attacking down the right-hand side. That put them 1-0 up. Halfway through the first half, Gifu had a great chance to equalise. Kawanishi was brought down in the area very weakly, I might add. But he dusted himself to take the penalty, but it was a really poor penalty. I mean, if you're asking goalkeepers where they want penalties to be, then hip height just to their right would probably be kind of one of the prime prime locations for it to be. For such a good player, it's such a poor penalty, and it's very difficult to square that circle. And then before half time it was 2-0, and you know, Gifu tried in the second half. They had plenty of possession, but I can only remember two saves that Ken Tajiri had to make. One just hit him flush in the face from close range. I don't, if it was 50 centimeters either side, it would have gone in, but I think it's that was just kind of reflection of the day, really. I think Tottori were the better side, and if you didn't know the context beforehand, you'd have said that Tottori were going for promotion, which, I mean, as weird as it sounds, they're only 2 points behind Gifu now, and they're only 5 points off Nagano, and we've got 9 points to play for. And so I suppose technically they're not out of it. And they Tajiri was interviewed after the game, and he said, yeah, we needed to win this game to keep in the promotion race. So you can imagine kind of they felt they were drinking in the last chance saloon. Gifu should have felt that way. And it was just a really flat performance, really, and it was something that shouldn't have unfolded like that, given that Gifu had won their previous three. But I suppose, that's kind of season we're in at the moment.
Yeah, I got the impression, and again, this is just from watching the highlights and from what I know of Gifu, I think they were a little bit underprepared, might not be the right word, but I think they underestimated Tottori just a little, and I think they got caught out a little bit by that quick counter in the 10th minute with Uzato tapping in at the far post. I don't think they expected to have Tottori push them back like that, pin them back like that early on. I don't think I seem to be the only person on riding this hype train, so I may as well go full steam ahead. And Naoto Misawa, the midfielder who scored the second goal, and he nearly added a third, didn't he? With his volley, hit the underside of the bar just at half time. He in a couple of, not every week, which I think it's important to stress, but now and again, he has like a higher gear that he goes into, and it's an above J3 gear is what I'm getting at, and I think he'll be he's done enough this year to earn a chance at a higher level, I think. I don't think Gifu really got the grips with him.
Well, no, they didn't. And it's something that, I mean, I'm on record as saying that I don't think Tottori are good enough for promotion, and I stand by that. I don't think they will get promoted. But what I have said before is that they've got the nucleus of, they've got some really good young players there. And I think that this offseason is going to be wild, really, because no one knows what kind of financial state all these teams are in. No one knows kind of who will be kept on and who will be staying. We'll, like, when we convene for the J2 pod, we'll talk about players that have been released already, and I expect J3 to be kind of more of that. And I you know, you wonder how these teams will prioritize keeping these players, or if it's financial, if it's, well,
let's go one step further. You're right that we don't know what kind of financial state the teams are in granular detail, but in J2 and J3 all the teams are going to be in a pretty terrible state, aren't they?
Yes.
After Yeah, I think so. We're talking about kind of levels of red ink here. So yeah, it's going to be absolutely fascinating. Yeah, I think we hopefully will get together or at least do some kind of wrap up on J2 this week. And yeah, there's already players available who it's going to be interesting to see where they end up next year. Yeah.
Mm. Okay then. So those are the three teams that were vying for second place at the start of this week. The team that are already promoted had a bit of an off day. Blaublitz Akita were beaten 3-1 at home by FC Imabari, who kept up their faint promotion hopes as well with this win. It was the first time that Akita have conceded 3 goals this year. They were down early on, actually. Wataru Harada's early goal put Imabari in front. Taira Shige pulled one. He got the equaliser just before half-time. And then, at the start of the second half, Yudai Tanaka saved a penalty. But from the resulting corner, he punched the ball into his own net. So, you know, swings and roundabouts and all that. Mm-hmm. And then as Akita piled forward looking for an equaliser, Masamichi Hayashi dinged them on the counter-attack to make it 3-1. I don't want to spend too much time in this game, John, because a little part of me thinks, who gives a fuck if Akita get beaten like this? It's not really important, is it, really, in the grand scheme of things?
No, I don't think so. Other than I think we should say well done to Imabari, because that would be a tough match in any circumstances going away to Akita. So I think to have scored 3 and had a penalty saved, we could have been talking about an even bigger win. I know the third goal came on a sort of breakaway right at the end, but still they worked that breakaway brilliantly. And if my team is 2-1 up away at the champions in the 89th minute, my striker is taking the ball into the corner and keeping it there.
Yes. They're not,
you know, and then as soon as a defender touches him, he's going down, holding his face. I think they earn that. I do like to see teams that will still swashbuckle, even when it's not entirely necessary. I think for me, this game is probably quite a good potential indicator of next season. I think you can see, now we're going to talk about this more, I think, once J2 and J3 are actually in the books for this year, Stu, but Akita next year are going to be in J2, we know that for sure. We also know, unless my maths is wrong, and it could be, there are going to be 4 relegation spots in J2 next year, is that right?
There are going to be 4 relegation spots
in
J2
next year. So, you know, I mean, Akita, we're looking already now to see... obviously, we know their strengths. We want to see where their weaknesses are to get them, you know, how they're going to fare in J2 next year. And I think we can say, after the first sort of 29 matches of being pretty invincible, we have seen some weaknesses, which we don't need to elaborate on here, because in defence of them, they're in party mode to some extent. I do think that'll be food for thought for the manager and the coaching staff, that then they're not unbeatable, clearly. And also, I think Imabari, I think next year are going to be pushing maybe a bit higher up the table than they are right now. 7th in their debut season is not bad at all. They've had some great wins and been really, really well organised defensively as well, for the most part. And I think... we mentioned finances. We know that they're a pretty well-backed team by J3 standards. You imagine they're one of the teams that's going to be able to choose which players they keep and sell in the winter window. And yeah, I just think this game might be, in the context of this season, yes, a dead rubber, or who gives a fuck, as you eloquently put it. No. I think that's right. But I think in the context. I think if you're Akita's manager, you might have stayed up an hour or two later the night after that game, pondering a few things. And I think if you're of an Imabari persuasion, that would probably make you even more excited for next year, potentially.
Yeah, I think before we move on, I remember saying maybe all the way back in the season preview piece that I thought that the most important team in Japan this year were Imabari. Because it was really important for them to to make a statement about coming up from the JFL, coming up with plans, and making sure that they establish themselves as a bona fide J League team. And like, that's exactly what they've done, and you can't help but think that the future looks very bright for that team. They've got a stadium planned, like a football specific stadium in their local area, and they're very well backed, and yeah, it the future is looking bright for them, one would say, and yeah, very good win for them as well. Moving on to Toyama, I could say a good win for them, but I suppose a regulation win for them. They beat Kamatamari Sanaki 2-0, Hayati Take with an early goal, and then a really good goal from Ten Miyagi, dragged it into the far left corner from the corner of the area. Really good goal. They're also on 50 points, John. Only 5 points behind Nagano. They're not out of it, are they?
No, I think it would take a sort of very 2020 confluence of circumstances to get them any higher than third or fourth, I would suggest. But I think they've rescued their season from potentially fizzling out in the last month or two. And in particular, Hayate Take, who you mentioned, scoring early on here, always a good striker of the ball, makes good contact. And I think that's 10 goals for the season. They could have done. This sounds like I'm picking on him. Obviously, they could have done with more goals in the first half of the season. But I think he's really been in good form the last month or two. If they can kind of carry that again, we're almost sort of. I'm kind of in next season mode already. It's a bit sad, really, isn't it? But yeah. But I think again, you know, if players like that, if they can just squeeze a bit more out of them in terms of consistency. Players like Hayate Take, then I think they'll probably have a good chance next year, because again, not to trail next season too heavily, but you know, no teams are coming down from J2 this year, right? So you would imagine, in theory, that means a team that finishes fourth or fifth in J3 this year will have a really, really good chance of going, you know, second the following. Obviously, that's oversimplistic, but I think Toyama are a team like Imabari, who've got good foundations in place. However, the reverse side of that would be, I think Toyama are one of the teams that financially are probably not in sort of great shape. So yeah, we'll see what happens with their key players in the off season. But yeah, a good win, and I think you used the word routine. I think that's another good sign that Toyama winning a home match against anybody is nothing to nothing to be surprised about.
Well, I mean, luckily for them, their next game is a relatively simple one. They're away at Kumamoto, who are in absolute stinking form. They've plummeted all the way down. Where am I looking now? They're not even... Where are they? Ninth. Jesus Christ.
Ninth, yeah.
Well, they drew 2-2 in Iwate at the weekend to all but extinguish... Well, not officially, but they are out of the promotion race. That was despite a league-leading... I think it was its 16th goal of the year for Kaito Taniguchi. Brenner put... Brenner? Yeah, that is
Brenner, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
Not Yul Brenner, obviously.
But I'm looking at it on the J League website now, and like it just says Brenner, like it's just like just Brenner, just like an English gentleman's name or something. But like for Iwate, the katakana is a bit weird. So Brunner or something like that.
Well, I think it, not to get into the weeds when it's quite late at night on a weekday, but what gets me is that because it's got a double N in English when it's written in Roman letters, it's Brenner, Brenner.
Yeah,
it's Brenner. So there's actually a double N in the katakana as well.
Yeah.
Which is always it always gives a cause for concern, yeah. Doesn't it? It's food for thought.
Kumamoto, actually, they had this game won, John, because Hikaru Nakahara scored with 5 minutes to go, but they just couldn't keep the clean sheet. They couldn't they couldn't defend the lead because
they couldn't keep a dirty sheet.
No, they couldn't keep it. Imagine that. Yeah, and Cortani scored with I think about a minute to go. We don't have time to get into what might have been for Kumamoto, but again, like they have all the attacking talent for J2, but none of the defensive talent for J3, which is kind of weird where they are, because they're the second top scorers. Am I looking at that right? Yeah, the second top scorers in the league, but their defense is shocking. They've conceded 45 goals this year, which is more than, I mean, it's more than kind of most of those most of the teams, right? Yeah, it's coulda, woulda, shoulda for Kumamoto. If they could actually defend, they would have been kind of easily favorites for the top two, but they just haven't been able to, and that's a shame. That's something we'll get into later on, but we've got to start wrapping things up here, John. Kagoshima beat Fukushima in the incredibly titled Shima United Derby, which I like the marketing on that. 2 goals from Takuma Sonoda, but I think Ryosuke Tamura's goal for Fukushima was easily the best goal of that game. Outside of the boot, through ball from Tokach, and a very cool finish from Tamura, who's been really impressive this year. But it wasn't enough for Fukushima because they lost at Kagoshima. Some of the other games as well. Let me just flick through my notes. Fujieda lost at Seretse under 23. Now, this game kind of foreshadowed the departure of Nobu Ishizaki, the Fujieda manager. He won't be in charge next year. I think, yeah, he's possibly maxed out his potential at Fujieda, but he's a really good coach. I think last year he might have been voted coach of the year in J3. And so my assumption is that if a team was interested in him, I think they'd be getting a really, really good coach. But maybe he's just reached the end of the line at Fujieda, in much the same way that Ken Yoshida did at Numazu. Because obviously he was at Numazu before going to Akita. Maybe Ishizaki might find himself somewhere where he can put his stamp on things again. But they were beaten 1-0 at Seretse under 23. They did have a goal rule. Fujieda did have a goal ruled out for offside, which didn't look anywhere near offside. And finally, speaking of Numazu, they lost 2-1 at home against Gamba under 23s. Gamba winning it with a penalty right at the end, where the foul was at least a couple of yards outside the box. Maybe that's been slightly favourable to Gamba. But yeah, swings and roundabouts. They've had some decisions go against them this year. And in fact, in the return fixture, I seem to remember Numazu should have had a player sent off for bringing someone down.
You're totally right. I'd completely forgotten that.
That just came to it. I could have been a little bit more vague, but I decided to keep it a little bit specific. But yeah, so that keeps us. That wraps things up for.
Brings us to the end.
So we'll just we'll go through the table. So like we've mentioned earlier, Nagano at second on 55 points. Sagamihara third on 54. Gifu are behind them on 52, and then Katari Toyama and Gainari Tottori are on 50 points. So we have, glory be, another round of games this midweek in J3. These are games in which all teams, this will be their third from last game. And yeah, if we take a look at the promotion candidates. So Sagamihara are hosting Numazu. Gifu are hosting Hachinohe. Nagano travel to Gamba under 23s. Toyama travel to Kumamoto. And Tottori get the difficult draw, but they're hosting Akita, and we're not quite sure what's going to happen with Akita right now. All these games, John, I mean, I mean, players just must be knackered right now. They must be, but they have to just drag themselves up for just one last effort, right?
Yeah, and I think if you look at the three games that I wanted to focus on, like, so the you know, Nagano, Sagamihara and Gifu, that's the top, or sort of the promotion, the main promotion contenders, they're all playing teams in 13th, 14th and 15th place in the table, you know, so the bottom quarter, but the bottom third of the table. Now, on a normal match day, you'd think that's three wins for the teams at the top, but pressure does funny things to players, and tiredness as well comes into it, and that there are always some kind of odd results, aren't there, towards the end of the season. So I do feel like maybe there'll be one. I think there'll be more twists and turns in this promotion race in the last three rounds, but I think there might even be a I don't think all three of these teams are going to easily win their games on Wednesday night. And Sagamihara, for example, their game's at 6 p.m. with the rest of the games at 7. So you might even get into the sort of Italian kind of biscotto, conspiracy theories. If, you know, Gifu obviously kicking off at 7, Nagano kicking off at 7, so they'll know what Sagamihara have done. By half time, their game will have finished. So I don't know how much difference it makes. I think. One thing we can say is I think all the players are tired. It was noticeable, not to go back to the YSCC game against Nagano, but for example, you know, they're able to start with Hiroshi Azuma on the bench, for example, to sort of semi-rest players of that quality. They can bring off Naoki Sanda and bring on Azuma, for example. I think Tsubasa... the other Sano, the Nagano one, not the Hachinohe one. Tsubasa
Ando.
He's
Hachinohe and Sano Tsubasa is Nagano.
The Nagano one. It's been a long day. Nagano, you know, again, a player who most other teams would have him starting every week.
Mm.
He was able to have a bit of a rest. So I think strength and depth is a factor right now, which might play into Nagano's hands a little bit. Although Sagamihara also rotate Romulo and Yuri, don't they, with some other homegrown strikers at times. It's going to be very interesting. But yes, I think tiredness is. It's something that we're all feeling.
Yes.
We're all feeling at this point. But yeah. I think we will say in happy news, this is the last midweek round for J3, isn't it?
It is this year.
Mm. And it's been fun, but I think I need the games to be spread out over 10 months and not 6.
I concur, especially with that. Okay, and done. Yeah, well, let's wrap it up there then. So, yeah, we've got all those games coming up on Wednesday. We've got one that kicks off at 1 o'clock on a weekday. How about that? Imabari versus Iwate.
We've got to enjoy it, because next season it might not be a thing,
It might not be a thing, yeah. 1 o'clock kickoffs on a usual Wednesday. I mean, that's something I am going to miss from J3 this year, because that is... fantastic. Okay, John, thanks for that, and yeah, we'll look forward to these games with some of us looking forward with excitement, some of us looking forward with trepidation, but that's what the end of the season's about, right? Hopefully John and I will be able to reconvene sometime later on this week to go through the carnage at the top of J2 as well. But until then, once again, thank you to all the patrons, and thank you to everyone who listens to this. But until we speak again, please stay safe, stay warm, and if you go out and watch football, enjoy the football. But until then, we'll speak to you next time. Goodbye for now.